For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're number one, baby. That's all I have to say, Bob. We're number one. How are you today? Good?
I'm doing well. Trying to navigate my voice, but other than that, so every now and then, you'll hear what I'm talking about. Hopefully not too much. I keep it at a low, like a simmer, like cooking.
It sounds wonderful.
Because if I get too excited, that's when it gets a little out of control.
Sounds Barry White-like. Is that the singer? Barry White Barry with the White. Low baritone?
Good morning, Joe.
Yeah. Low baritone is redundant,
it's time
Bob.
For the Joe Show.
Limits, everything well over in your corner of the planet?
Yeah, everything's fine.
Doesn't sound like
no,
it, even from
not.
The way you said, yeah, what's happening?
I'm just mad about this weekend's college football games,
well,
Joe.
Let's start. Well, actually.
I'm irritated. You know why, Joe? You know why I'm irritated?
Why?
It's the same garbage we talk about every year with
all
this
right.
team.
All right, then let's dive into it. We'll get to Dennis Allen being fired in a minute. Luke Getsy also.
My friend Luke Getsy.
Poor Getsy.
Wow. People panic in the NFL.
Well, first of all, since you brought him up,
yeah.
Antonio Pierce should never have been given that job looking back.
That's the perils of giving it to the interim
who has a rebound. They didn't do it the first time. When they had, what's the guy's name? Who was the...
I remember him. The special teams coach. Yeah. I forget his name.
He didn't get it.
Right.
He went out and gave it to Josh McDaniel. And then that didn't work. And
right.
they go interim again.
Does anybody think, by the way, that the offensive coordinator is the problem
Vegas? No.
Could it be the quarterbacks? Maybe. It's just a wild guess.
Oh, and how about this breaking news that just came down the
what
pipeline?
Now?
You want to talk about overreactions?
Yes.
Is this an overreaction? Schefter and Rappaport reporting that the New Orleans Saints have fired head coach Dennis Allen.
Did I just not mention that, Bob?
Yes, you did.
Unbelievable.
Limits. What is happening? I just mentioned that 2 seconds ago.
I missed that with the Getsy reaction.
Sorry. That's okay. Now I feel like I'm with Ron again, Bob. This is incredible. Yes, Dennis Allen done. A month and a half ago, we were talking about the Saints and Derek Carr as, you know, a big rebound story. And their offense was on fire. And now he's getting shredded for leaving receivers hanging out to dry
and getting injured and everything else,
if you believe that's the case.
What do you think about that comment? Like, all of a sudden, Derek Carr is intentionally throwing hospital balls, as they call them.
Michael Thomas.
He was out there. Come on. Does he need to go and take it to that degree?
I know. The story, in case you missed it, is Michael Thomas, former Saints receiver, ripping Derek Carr for what Thomas perceives as throwing, you know, hospital balls up there to Chris Olave, who now is hurt with a concussion again. It's ridiculous. Like Carr, one thing about Derek Carr, he seems to be respected and liked by people, does he not?
Yes.
Or do I have that wrong, Bob?
Yes.
What happened in Oakland? Everything got weird there, and why are we talking about this?
I don't know. We went off the rails again.
Well, let's jump into college football. We'll get back to all of that. Yes, we're going to get to the Steelers as a 2-point underdog. Yes, we're going to get to the Steelers midseason report and the NFL midseason report. Tell you who I got for Coach of the Year, a guy that I keep forgetting is even a person. I didn't even realize. If I asked 1,000 people on the street who's the coach of the Arizona Cardinals, 980 of them, if not all 1,000, would say, I have no idea. Anyway, Bob, let's start with college football because we're coming off, really, if you're a Pitt or Penn State fan, an unimaginable bummer of a weekend. I guess we know now why Pitt was a 7.5-point underdog. Those people in Vegas who watch every game and comb through every game could see that was, in terms of talent, that was a grotesque mismatch. That reminded me of some of the old, before 13-9, some of the old West Virginia Pitt games where Steve Slayton and Pat White would be basically running their own personal track meet, handing the baton to each other. And Dave Wannstedt goes on at halftime one day, and the lady says to him, what's the problem? He says, we need to run faster. They were just out-athleted in that game, like I said, grotesquely. That was a mismatch. Agreed?
Well, yes, and if you watch SMU, they live up to the name of the Mustangs. I mean, they got that the old school Pony Express kind of 2.0, as a lot of people have been referring to it. They're very good at what they do. Jennings, their quarterback, is very good at what he does when he's in there and healthy. This team had missed some players. One of their most prominent wide receivers was not going to make it that day, and yet they still had enough to really just tear apart Pitt's defense. And the offense now, this is three straight games where I haven't seen enough of them to make me think that they're worthy of anything but where they are, which is, to me, they're ranked, but they shouldn't be ranked. I don't think Pitt has played one ranked team this year, and when they did, they got smacked. So, to me, they were overvalued. Now, this is coming off a 3-9 team, and I understand winning is the thing. They were 7-0. They earned that, and it was a good story. But went up against some of these, you know, better competitions, and I wouldn't include any one of the teams they've played as an elite team.
No, they haven't played
SMU
a top.
SMU is an elite team in terms of being a top 20 legitimate team, and I think they are.
Talent-wise, I think they are actually an elite team. My God, some of the guys they have on their team. But, I mean, Pitt got exposed. I think we can all admit that. They hadn't played a top 30 team yet. I thought they were better than this. I thought Eli Holstein was on his way to being a star quarterback. And I don't really care about last year. I don't rate Pitt in reference to last year. Last year was a complete disaster, inexcusable for this point in the Pat Narduzzi era to even have a season like that. I'm certainly not going to give them the benefit of measuring this season off that season. It reminds me of the Pirates. Well, they improved from 40 wins to 55. Aren't they great? No, because they had 40 last year. That's why. They don't get the benefit of me saying how much better they are coming off an inexcusably embarrassing season that never should have happened. Not to mention the fact that college football is fantasy football, basically, in how they build their teams. One year has very little to do with the previous year. This is a new team, new quarterback, new lot of things, and I was wrong about Holstein, unfortunately, because I'm not seeing it.
I don't know that you can say you're wrong.
You think he's going to be a star? I thought he would be a star.
I think he's regressed. He's only a redshirt freshman. So, therefore, I would say to you, be patient. If you look at Kenny Pickett's curve to where he was at the beginning to where he was at the end, it took some time for him to get to that point. And I think in this case, it will. Now, if he decides to move on.
I know, but Bob, that took 9 years. Pickett was 36 by the time he left Pitt.
No,
I'm thinking that Holstein.
But I think Holstein is a kid who just needs more time. He is, to me, regressed, but I think the whole offense has regressed, or other teams have started to figure out their tendencies and really made it hard for them.
Yeah.
But they haven't. You know, going to SMU, you'd have to score points. You knew that going in. And last I saw the game before they got two insignificant scores, it was 48-11.
Yeah.
They did not do much at
no,
all.
No, it was graphic and blatant what was happening there. And then,
but then the question with them is, and you may say this is stupid to ask because they play two ranked teams, although one of them just got clobbered at home, Clemson, by the team who's now ranked, Louisville.
Right.
They have these games left. If they win out, what happens to Pitt? And where would they figure? Because tomorrow is not only Election Day, but it's the NFL trade deadline, but it's the first day we see college football rankings based on what we may look at as a possible field of 12.
Yeah, but that's a good question. If Pitt were to win out, what would their fate be? I don't think they'd be in the ACC championship, would they?
I don't know.
I mean, I still think it would be.
With all these new teams, I'm not sure how they set that up.
Here's my question, and nobody can answer it, and I apologize for my ignorance. Would a two-loss SMU team, is it possible for them to get into the ACC championship over Pitt?
A two-loss SMU?
Or a two-loss...
If Pitt wins out, you're talking about.
Yeah. It's based on the rankings, correct?
I think so, yes. And they're going to come up with their own rankings. It's not the rankings you've seen so far. So what we'll see tomorrow is different.
Right.
But, yeah, it will depend on where they're ranked. And here's the biggest question to me is how many ACC teams are going to be afforded versus the Big Ten? You know, because Indiana's still undefeated. They gouged Michigan State.
Yeah,
they have
right.
a chance to go to against Ohio State undefeated.
I think Indiana might win that game.
And if they do, how many ACC or Big Ten teams are there? Because
right.
Oregon's definite, probably the at-large.
Ohio State, Oregon,
and would you put
Penn State.
Indiana. You take
if they
four.
Keep, if they, they have to go if they keep winning.
You would take four over...
Well, Indiana might be second on that list. If they beat Ohio State.
And Penn State has the same situation Pitt does. They could win out and find themselves in a playoff, potentially. Which would make those who want James Franklin to be fired maybe reconsider if he gets in and wins a game.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. Just to finish up on Pitt, I don't think we're going to have to worry about that. I think they'll beat Virginia. Clemson is now a toss-up. We were all dreaming of a top 10, maybe top 5 Clemson and a top 12 Pitt team. Look how far SMU went from 20, I think, to what, 13?
13.
Yeah. What would Pitt have done with a convincing win or any kind of win? I don't know, but then you got to go at Louisville and at the Fighting Bill O'Briens, and while they've had struggles, I'm not counting on anything now from Pitt. I think they're probably a 3-loss team, maybe a 2-loss team, maybe a nice season, but considering the schedule, it's kind of the least they could do, honestly. They haven't even played a top 30 team until SMU, according to Sagarin's rankings.
That's why this was a big weekend. They finally had a chance on a big stage to take their story to the national consumer.
And that's how it works.
And say, if you have this chance, you do it. And if you do it, all of a sudden, now you're moving up quickly.
That's how it works. Yeah, I was going to say it's college sports. It's pro sports. That's how it works. You win, you keep winning, you get all the adulation and everything else and the rewards that come with winning, and you go to a place on a national stage and come up with a performance like that, and you get all the criticism. That's just the way it works. And I feel like I was wrong about Holstein, unfortunately. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. I thought they had an emerging star. Like, Bob, we were talking about him as a potential Heisman candidate. He was on some people's Heisman lists early, and now it would appear that was more a function of the opponents than anything else.
True.
Doesn't mean he's a bad player.
It's also, we overreact to a lot of things week to week, and that's just how this is, which is interesting and fun at the same time. But I think you have to be patient with young kids, and he's still a redshirt freshman. Now, I think the bigger question is for him, since we're on him, what happens if this season just sort of falls off and it's not what you thought it might be? Does he remain here? Because there was talk midway through the season, like, okay, this guy's going to price himself out of Pitt because we are dealing with professional sports now. So what happens? Does he stay? He would be best inclined to stay, I think. With a year under his belt to stay here, be only 2 years here. He still has more time after that if he's
best inclined to stay versus the pros or another college program.
No, another college. I'm talking.
I'm not prepared to say that he may, because now I'm starting to wonder about Cade Bell a little bit. After this offense went crazy, they just haven't been good now for 3 weeks in a row. So are people starting to figure that out? I don't know. I'm in a holding pattern with Pitt. To me, in a way, the juicier story here is Penn State. And the James Franklin situation limits. You were there. I know you have some strong feelings. You're a Penn State guy. Is that right or no?
Yeah. I mean, I also support Pitt. People think that that's like illegal to do, but I don't really care. I'm getting my master's from Penn State. I was at the game. And it was the third game I've been to this year. And it's just the same exact thing, Joe, that we've seen time after time with James Franklin in big games. They beat the teams you expect Penn State to win, but they can't beat the teams when they're underdogs. Franklin is now 1-9 against Ohio State, 1-14 against the top 5, 3-18 against top 10 teams, and he's 1-7 at home against teams ranked in the top 10. I mean, it's just unacceptable at this point. And it just seems like we're seeing the same thing over and over again. Because you always think, and they're the higher ranked team than Ohio State. It's at home. Sure, it's a noon game, whatever. But, I mean, you have a quarterback who everybody thinks is better than Will Howard, and it's Howard that steals the show.
Yeah, I was wrong about him too, Bob. My quarterback rating system needs some corrections here. This was a big day for Drew Aller, and a lot of people telling me, oh, it wasn't his fault. Well, if that's the best thing, see, I rate quarterbacks and goalies kind of the same. If the best thing you can tell me is he wasn't that bad or it wasn't his fault, that's the lowest of compliments. He wasn't good, I'll tell you that much. Let me present this to you with a Penn State fan I know, Bob, okay. And then I'll turn the stage over to you. I said, basically, if the idea is to win a national championship, how much longer can you go with this? How much longer? He said, here's my Franklin take, which is subject to change. How many programs would I rather trade places with for the past decade? Bama, Georgia, OSU, Clemson, Oklahoma, Michigan, maybe. So Penn State is sixth or seventh. And that's with the third and sixth place programs in your own division for a lot of that time. So who are you going to hire that's going to lead a top five program in the country? I'm not against getting someone who will be better. Just don't know who that would be. But I'd also say a playoff loss where we're favored would sway me. To me, that's the story. The upshot of all of this is that if James Franklin gets in the playoff and loses in the first round, especially as a favorite, I think it's time to move on.
I would concur, and that's what I was saying at the beginning. I think this season is far from over. I think if you're in the situation and he can somehow get this team back to, you know, to winning, I don't care that they're unranked teams. They have four of them, two home, two away. If they could win those games, get themselves in a playoff, and win a playoff game, it would change the viewpoint of a lot of people. Here's what I'll say about James Franklin, and this is the same ailment that for many years hurt coaches at Ohio State and Michigan alike. When you're expected to win those games and you don't, Jim Harbaugh was on the verge of being fired, and then he wins a national championship.
Yeah.
You could be patient and wait because James Franklin, when he took this program over, took over a program that's not what it is right now. He had a lot to do with that, with his recruiting and everything else. And believe me, I understand the pushback about not winning these games, but I also know that you have to first get in that conversation and be this program, and he's made it. So a couple people last night pointed out, we had this discussion on a sports call show, and immediately I got a call from a Florida fan who said, I'll take him over FSU right now. That program has just gone totally backwards, and I'll take it. Depends on what side you're looking at here. You can look at, if you're a program that once was ranked 10th preseason like Florida State and has had a miserable season, they would welcome somebody like that. I'm saying there's time. We'll see what happens. If they should lose two more along the way and don't even get to a playoff, a whole different story, I think. But
what about first-round playoff loss? You firing him? I am.
I don't know that I am. I'm more patient than that, and I understand why people have this opinion. But how many years did Jim Harbaugh lose to Ohio State in a row? Or for that matter, any Ohio State coach that lost to Michigan going back over the last few decades? It's not easy. You get into this situation, you put yourself in a position to win. Yes, people expect it to win. But you're also at a level where, as your friend said on your text exchange, that this is a, you know, one of the top programs, top 10 in the country, year in and year out. Do they win enough big games? No, absolutely not. But they're there.
Yeah, man. I'd feel differently if he was, what's his record against Ohio State? 1-9?
1-9.
1-9?
I thought it was 1-10.
Is it 1-10?
Well, whatever it is.
I mean, if it
ridiculous.
Was if it was 4-6 or 3-7, he literally never wins the biggest games.
And the one against Ohio State that they won, they got a blocked field goal for a touchdown at home in a night game atmosphere. That if you've never been up there,
yeah, that still counts.
I don't take credit away for that. All I'm saying, and I've been a big defender actually of James Franklin, with the rationale kind of that you were using, that man, I would love for my team, if I had one in college football, to recruit like that, to give myself a chance. Nobody can deny that Penn State is almost always talented enough to win it all. Like, they're really, the recruiting classes he brings in are really talented.
And he has another one coming.
But at some point, if he literally never wins big games, I've got to move on, because the goal here is to win a national title. So I think that playoff game for him, should he get there, and I still think they will, that first round playoff game, I honestly believe he should be coaching for his job.
One of the scenarios has Penn State as a at-large bid at home against Boise State.
Mm.
That's the example you're talking about. If they get Boise State to come to Happy Valley and they lose, that's enough to take you in that direction, I think.
Exactly.
But, again, there's still time left in this season. And while people immediately have made a conclusion, I think it's better to wait, because you do have 12 teams
for
as
sure.
opposed to four.
For sure. This is like the NFL. You know, they didn't get eliminated with anything yesterday. They had a home loss, you know. And, by the way, if I had to pick one play from the game, it was that interception in the end zone.
Oh, that was
a
great defensive
incredible play. But the Penn State kid should have caught the ball. He bobbled it, and that's what allowed that all to happen. and then not to ever go to Ty Warren on the goal line.
Well, that was
criminal.
Coaching malpractice there.
Coach, that's what I'm what people are talking about. It's coaching malpractice.
The fact that they had that number 71 in motion all three times and ran the same exact play.
Bob, that's what people are talking about. He gets out coached every time.
No, I get it. And we made that a big point last night on the showdown. Why number 44 is not involved in this game after he got you down there is ridiculous.
I would give him the ball in some way, shape, or form, or throw, you know, intend it for him every single play from down there. I feel like there's a chance if everybody on the other team knows he's going to get it, he could still score. That's how great I think that kid is. And that is coaching malpractice. You can blame it on the O coordinator, but everything goes through the head coach. And if that means he has to yell in the guy's ear, get it to Warren, no matter what down here, no matter what. Do you think if Aller had kept one of those, had tucked it and kept it, he walks in for a touchdown down on the goal line?
I was hoping they'd spread it out a little bit and give him options because, you know, he had a knee injury coming in this game, but he was running well the whole game. I would have kept that option alive for me as well. But we saw none of it. We saw the same play over and over and over, and then all of a sudden a straight drop back pass. On that, to me, that limits your options.
And I also have to stand here sort of marveling at the different standards for Pitt and Penn State. That always gets me because you have a Pitt coach who, again, walked in here all those years ago talking about national championships and being the best team in the state and all of that. And just last week, we were saying, hey, Pitt's alive for a playoff, could play Penn State. And yet, we come in here the day after, or 2 days after, both of these losses, and we're saying things like, James Franklin should be fired if he doesn't win a playoff game, but Pitt, we'll measure them against last year's 3-9. So it'll be okay if Pitt wins 9. That's a good year for Pitt. It's a firing year for Penn State. Why such differences, Bob?
Because expectations continue to change. And again, I think James Franklin, when he came here in the first place, it was not the program it is now. He has a lot to do with where that program has developed. However, you get to a point where you're a victim of your own success because now people raise the bar. They always do. Or they also lower the bar vis-a-vis the Pirates. You know, it's the same thing. I mean, your expectations are what you expect based on what you see year in and year out. What I see from Penn State year in and year out is this. Since 2022, they are 0-5 against Michigan and Ohio State. They're 28-1 against everyone else. That's their dilemma.
Well, it's far worse than that when it comes to playing good teams. Far worse than that. I'm sure Limits has some numbers over there, and I can call up some myself.
I understand. I've seen that, and I've posted them. I'm just saying, when it comes to their conference, they win every game except Ohio State and Michigan.
You know what was the most ironic thing about the entire game, Bob, is that they had the ball four plays from the 3-yard line. Four plays, and they get nothing. They get like a yard. Ohio State immediately runs a quarterback sneak from the 1-yard line and gets 5 yards. That's just bully ball at the line of scrimmage.
Right there, even if you don't score there, which they didn't, they allowed Ohio State to possess the ball the rest of the way.
I know.
And that's where you didn't score. Now you're pinned in their own goal line. Now you got to do something to get that ball back quickly. And that didn't happen.
So if we're going to go with the pro football analogy, and what is college football but pro football, James Franklin is the equivalent of a coach who never wins a playoff game. Just never wins a playoff game.
Yeah.
Gets in as a wild card, whatever, if this is the NFL, but never wins. 1-7 versus top 10 teams at home. 1-9 versus top 5 teams overall. 1-10 versus Ohio State. 6-10 versus ranked teams at home. So if I'm the people running that program, for me it's about, is this good enough? It's pretty good. Nobody's saying it's not good, but is it good enough? And in the end, if I have an NFL coach who is whatever, a decade in, and never wins me even a playoff game, then I feel like I've got, call me crazy, but I feel like I've got no shot at the Super Bowl.
All right, how much pressure would there be on the incoming guy then if you make a move? Because the expectations will not change, at least to start. He's going to have to win those games immediately. What happens if he doesn't?
Man,
and then all of a sudden the recruiting goes south.
That's life in pro sports. It'd be like Tony Dungy getting replaced by John Gruden. There's only one place to go. Gruden better win the Super Bowl or it's a bust, right?
No, I get it.
And his buyout is $56 million at the end of the year. But, I mean, I'm sure somebody could pony up some of that money. I mean, think about all the CEOs. I think I saw a number that Penn State has like the largest alumni group of CEOs out of any school
in the country. I'm sure they could handle it amongst themselves if that was their desire.
And the other thing about it is, oh, well, can you find somebody better than James Franklin to be the coach? Are you really going to have that fear going into it? I mean, are you really going to be reserved in trying to get rid of James Franklin because of who could be the next guy who maybe won't take it? Oh, well, maybe they won't be as good. It's just mediocre right now. It's not good enough.
All right. You can have that feeling, but in 5 years, if things go the other way, then you'd be clamoring
right.
for another change.
If they
do you really,
a playoff
do you really
game,
think a school of Penn State's profile is just going to, like, somebody else couldn't come in there and recruit to that level? You think it would just fall apart where nobody wants to go to Penn State?
What I'm saying is there is the chance of that happening.
I think it's a tiny chance.
Do me a favor. Find out Jim Harbaugh's record against Ohio State, because I'm sure you're going to find the same exact criticism before he finally broke through, not only won the game, but wins the national championship. And
he left with a 3-5, so he was 0-5. That's different than 1-10.
Okay, but it's still 0-5.
But it's a shorter
sample.
But the
pressure was there. What would happen if Ryan Day loses to Penn State?
That's why him and Chip Kelly were celebrating like they won the Super Bowl, because they knew their jobs were on the line.
Exactly. I think so. The pressure was there for them as well. I mean, these expectations sometimes are a real... It's a tough, but you know what you're doing when you go into those jobs. That's why they're exclusive jobs and they're big jobs and they pay well. The pressure is going to be there. And that's fine.
I mean, yeah, sometimes it does get ridiculous. I mean, Ryan Day is 63-9, Bob. He's 42-4 in the Big Ten. 42-4. What are we talking about? What's his record at home against ranked teams?
Find that out.
I'm sorry, but that's not, I get it. People have unrealistic expectations. I've never gotten it with him. I don't know what the problem is there. 63-9? What are they? This and they're having another good year this year.
Yeah, but guess what? If they somehow lose to Michigan coming up.
I know. He's lost, what, three in a row to Michigan?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. It won't happen this year, but it could. You never know.
And Ohio State had lost their last ranked matchups. They were 0-3 in their most recent ones. They lost to Missouri, Oregon, Michigan. Against top five teams, he was only 8-8 going into the day.
Way different than 1-9.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Way different than 1-9 against top five teams. 1-7 against top teams at home. Do you start to get the feeling that when he goes against the better programs and the better coaches, he loses?
Yes.
Because I think we have a pretty good sample size of that right now.
Yes.
Maybe it'll change. Maybe it will.
Well, I say I'm patient to the point where I want to see the rest of the playoffs season, and I want to see, because they have 12 teams, let's see what happens. And maybe you still might see Pitt at Penn State. Because if Pitt gets in, they're going to be one of the lower-ranked at-large bids. And if they do take, again, it's all up for grabs. But if they win four, they could very well get in and who knows, maybe they'll pair them up against Penn State in a ranking that would be great to see.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Text line lit up on James Franklin and Penn State and the Pitt game. I have somebody saying to me on the wonderful social media platform called X, duh. The reason expectations are greater for Penn State is because Penn State consistently has top 10 recruiting years, while Pitt's lucky to be in the top 30. Also, Pitt's record versus top 20 teams is likely better than Penn State's over the last 10 years. What? So what are you saying there? Maybe that recruiting sometimes doesn't equal your performance against top 10. I don't know what he's saying. But if he wants to admit, or if he's admitting that Penn State is clearly the superior program, I guess, okay. See, I think Pitt should be held to a similar standard. The idea here is to win. Given Pitt's history, given its coach's stated intention when he walked in here and ever since, that they can win a national championship, that the 12-game playoff is something they can get into and compete, why wouldn't I hold Pitt to the same standard? Why? other than if I just frankly admit that Penn State is the superior program and maybe by far the superior program. Is that what little, I don't know what this guy's name is. Is he admitting that or not? I don't understand what he's doing there, Bob.
Yeah, it's all about winning. And this year, especially with the ACC being what it was and is, you know, Joe, I thought it was a wide open door for a playoff for not only the team that's going to win the conference, but somebody else. And it's still available. Through all this and this bad loss against SMU, it's still available to them. So we'll see what they do with it. But, yeah, I don't think if you look at the programs or what the programs have been able to do from a recruiting standpoint, you would at all consider Pitt in the same class as Penn State. Penn State is out-recruited.
So we should definitely hold Pitt to a lower standard, is what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Oh. I'm just saying that's the truth of how they recruit, correct?
Yeah, Penn State has a higher level of recruit.
Because of that, you would expect bigger results in bigger games because they have bigger name players and higher-end recruits. But still, it comes down to coaching in those games, and that's where I think James Franklin fails a lot in big games. He gets out-coached in big games. We saw that again in this game the other day at the goal line with some of those calls and what they were doing. And also, after it failed, to not be able to stop Ohio State at all. And they ran out the final 4.5, 5 minutes, whatever it was, in that game. So,
well, then there's after the game. And it didn't get any better for Franklin after the game when there was a fan leaning on the railing. I don't know what the guy was saying, a heckling Penn State fan. And Franklin took the bait. Come on. What are you doing? You're supposed to be like the CEO of the sideline there. You're actually going to take the bait from somebody and go and address them? If you're going to be man enough to talk, what's your name, he said. What did you make of that, Bob?
Well, for a guy who constantly pushes focus, we're on the pit, we're on the pit, we're on the pit, we're on the pit. Ohio State, Ohio State, Ohio State. We don't listen to the outside noise. All of this. If you're going to preach that, you better live up to it. And by engaging anyone after a game like that is exact opposite what he tells his kids. He's listening to people he shouldn't be listening to. And it's a bad look, especially for some young kid who just is there probably because he wants to make some clicks on social media that he's the big guy who stood up to James Franklin. Franklin should ignore it all. He preaches that. We don't listen to the outside noise. Well, yes, you do. And that's what you just did.
Yeah.
And that noise is coming from a group you don't want to acknowledge.
Right. Just walk off the field. You're the head coach. Now, this story said he's 1-14 against top five teams. What, is he losing games to top five teams on his day off now? The other story said 1-9. Which is it, Limits?
Well, he was 1-9 coming in against Ohio State, which is now 1-10. And Pony pointed it out yesterday, too. 1-14 against the top five. 13-27 against the top 25.
That's ridiculous, Bob.
It is. For a program of that caliber, it is. But for this year, if they should win their Final Four and get a playoff and win a playoff game, I think all will be forgotten, but mostly by a fan base.
We had another situation with someone angrily confronting a person, and that was Jason Kelce. Did you see that one? Was that at the Penn State game?
Again, yes. I think it's ridiculous that people can go out and taunt people. Jason Kelce.
Well, that's a far different situation. That's somebody when you're just a regular citizen going to a game, Jason right. Kelce, and somebody approaches you with that crap talking about your brother.
Yeah.
And it's to me, it was one of these social media trolls who right. I don't even know if they know they're living in reality, that other people are real. Well, that kid found out fast, this ain't X or this ain't Instagram or whatever else or wherever else. You get your muscles to confront people. To me, a totally different situation than the heckling fan on Franklin.
What happened to him?
Yes.
To be honest. Because he went out of his way. He had the phone rolling. This is what I hate about social media.
Yeah.
What I hate about this current culture of this phone. Everyone rolls on everything, and they want to get people to respond to it. They'll put it on any social media platform, and, oh, look at this guy, and get a click.
Right.
Why? What does that do for you?
It's the anonymous, gutless social media troll.
Whatever happened
in this case, come to life. It's almost like the kid thought, "What is it? Is the real world a video game?" No, that's a person.
And he
that's
was
an actual
his
person.
Own business. He yeah. was walking straight to where he had to go.
Right.
And at some point, you get to a point where you just okay, fine. You want to play this game? Here's my game. I'm taking your phone. I'm smashing into smithereens.
Yeah.
And go cry to the social media fan base you have.
Right. That's
because they'll make you out to be a victim, yet you were the perpetrator of this whole thing.
That would be the equivalent of if James Franklin was out to dinner or at a movie and somebody came up with that crap, especially talking about your family. That's way different to me.
Yes.
Than if you're a heckler. Now, if this fan had gone over the line with stuff he was saying, but it sounded, from what I read, like it was regular old "you suck" type stuff.
Yeah. Goal line, what you do, you're a terrible game coach, all that stuff.
Limits, where do you fall on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I am actually okay with James Franklin standing up for himself in that situation. It's a terrible look for Franklin. He shouldn't be doing it, but I don't have as big of a problem with it as a lot of other people do. In terms of Kelsey, come on, man. Like, you're really going to try to heckle Jason Kelsey and say things that you shouldn't? What do you expect to happen to you?
Well, I think the heckling would be okay.
He's lucky it wasn't
him slugged.
And not the phone, because it could have been him.
Right, no problem with what Kelsey did. None at all.
50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. It's 10:50. Time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. The text line went crazy on the Franklin Narduzzi Pitt talk earlier. What did people have to say? Limits.
Yeah, a lot of different things being said, but one that mostly stood out was multiple people comparing James Franklin to Marvin Lewis.
That's an unbelievable comparison, Bob. I unwittingly basically made that comparison earlier when I talked about this is pro sports. College sports is pro sports, and this would be the equivalent of having a successful coach never win a playoff game. I wasn't even thinking Marvin Lewis. That's the greatest comparison I've ever heard.
Great comparison. Others
it was great
him to
at first. He's got great talent. They've got a talented team. They win some nice games. But if the idea is to win a championship and you literally never, ever, ever win big games, then what are we doing here? You can only, and yeah, give it a decade. That's only fair. But what are we doing here? What else?
Other people comparing him to Mike Tomlin. And also,
I don't understand that comparison because Tomlin actually has won, right?
Yeah, but in terms of like recent success in the biggest games.
Well, to me, there's a big difference when you actually have won. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't have moved on, for example, from Tomlin, or at least not offered an extension. But that's an insult to Mike Tomlin, to me. Well, Bob, your thoughts on the Tomlin-Franklin comparison?
Because Tomlin has a record of it. It's not most recently, of course, and that's where some of the criticism, and it's right to come, given their expectations, and given the fact that Art Rooney said, we need to start winning playoff games. He knows what's at stake there. But, yeah, Marvin Lewis is the perfect
11. This is comparison. Franklin's 11th year. His 11th year. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'd say it's time. Time to win a playoff game? I would say that's the minimum that would prompt me to keep him. What else?
One of the texters pointed out that it was his opinion that college offenses especially are trying to outsmart themselves in terms of the goal line play instead of just, why not give it to Tyler Warren three times even? I mean, he might win the Mackey Award for the best tight end in the country. He got you down there. He had like 60 yards on the drive. And as the texter points out, it seems like Penn State outsmarted themselves instead of just giving him the football.
That for sure. But on the other hand, it didn't look like Penn State was getting all wild and crazy down there. They were thinking, we're just going to hand it straight ahead and power our way into the end zone. So were they getting too cute or crazy? I don't know. They just weren't involving the right guy.
I'm a big fan of spreading things out at the goal line. Whenever you do what they do there, when you clog it all up, you're playing, to me, advantage defense. And Ohio State has some big dudes on that defense up the middle like that. You're running into a wall. And if that's the case, you're making it easier for them, I think. I would spread guys out. You have talented guys, Warren being the top. And even with his legs that day, he was running well. You could have created different options. And from what I saw of their offensive coordinator, they've used some of these kind of things throughout the course of the year, and yet in this situation they did not.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think, if anything, given the fact that Ohio State seemed to be the superior team up front on both sides, get cuter at the goal line. Get more creative at the goal line. They didn't get too cute. They didn't get cute enough.
Yeah, just give yourself options other than the same one over and over. I couldn't believe that 71 guy kept going in motion, and he missed a block even at one point.
Yeah, you wanted to just yell, you're not pushing them back. Stop. Do something different. How about 44? Give him the ball on every play, because he's the one guy who, if you don't block in front of him, could still get in. Or throw him a 50-50 ball. Or throw him a ball with two guys on him. I don't care what you do. Try to get him the ball every single time. Bob, he's a top five player in the country to me.
And for the first half of that game, he wasn't utilized at all. And then the second half, finally, they did. I mean, I thought for sure, what was it, a 35-yard play down to that inside the five-yard line? He was the guy who did it. And then all of a sudden, there was nothing. And I said, because I'm thinking to myself, he's going to be the reason they win this game now.
Yeah.
He got them there, and he's going to get them in.
And you owe it to yourselves to give him that opportunity. I remember as you were talking there, being at a Pitt-Syracuse game, all those years ago. And it was a day Josh Cummings, the Pitt kicker, missed a couple field goals or definitely missed one late. They lose at Syracuse. That game came down to a 4th-and-3, I think, where Syracuse stopped Pitt. And Tyler Palko was the guy on that team, and they went with like a handoff or something weird on that. And I remember writing, if I go home at night after this game as a coach, I can live with myself if I let my best player decide the game. I can live with myself, whether it's basketball, football, whatever. I can't live with myself if I didn't. You know what I mean, Bob?
When you talk about
they
NBA
needed to get the ball,
college basketball,
to their
who
best
do they
player.
Want? Who gets to take the final shot? Right?
Right, exactly.
It's the same concept, I think. Not, it's more prevalent in college basketball or pro basketball, but in this case, it applies.
Like, what are the odds that they're going to stop that guy four times, four different ways? However, they wanted to get him the ball, try to throw it to him, whatever. I'm riding with him.
He was their leading rusher in the game on 3 carries for 47 yards.
Yeah, I'm riding with him. I feel like if your whole team left the field and it was him against their 11, he might have a chance. That's how good he is.
There were really 3 plays in this game, though, guys, that ended the game. One was Harrison Wallace bobbling the ball in the end zone before the end of the half that Ohio State intercepted, with a chance to go up in that game. The other was just the dumb penalty. You can't have it with a 10-0 lead, and the defender, after making a play on 4th down, steps over the wide receiver, and Ohio State's drive sustained. They go down, score a touchdown, take the momentum back. And the other is in the final couple minutes of the game. Abdul Carter on 4th-and-1 has a chance to sack Will Howard. He has him in his grasp, and Howard is able to escape, throw the ball, 1st down, continues the drive, burns the clock.
A lot of people didn't like that call of the taunting, but by letter of the law, it is what it is.
Oh, yeah, I'm so sick of that call at the pro and college level. After every single play, guys get up and jaw in each other's faces. I was watching the NFL yesterday. Guys literally taunting the other sideline. I saw Jordan Poyer, former Bill for the Dolphins, doing that crap. It's such a random, stupid penalty. You know what I thought back to? How the Steelers won a game. Who was it? Cassius Marsh? For the Bears? Was that who it was?
Yes.
They called him for, they basically flagged him for looking at the Steelers sideline.
That was a terrible, terrible thing.
That needs to be out of the game.
But it is in the game.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but it's randomly.
If it's in the game, though, and if you're in that situation, you can't give the official the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. It's an emotional, violent game. You get up jawing at people. They do it the whole game.
He stood over him. And in the rule book, it stayed that's what it is.
I hate
that. And what
rule.
I'm saying is they should never, he should have just rolled away from him instead of done that.
I can't stand games being decided on crap.
There
like
are a
that.
Lot of rules that need to be changed in all levels of sports that we know of. And until they do it.
They do it, I guess they'll just apply it haphazardly whenever they feel like it. Well, even though it happens 10 times in a game.
It does happen. And it doesn't necessarily have to be standing over a guy. That's the one that they want to get rid of. But you're right. There's a lot of chatter that goes on all the time. And a lot of it is okay to do.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.